Pick Six Podcast, the first podcast of the 2012 NFL season, as it were. And yes, for those wondering, we did kind of disappear during Super Bowl week. We'll talk about that. We'll explain ourselves. We will talk about the latest repercussions from the Super Bowl, what it means for Tom Brady, what it means for Eli Manning, what it means for the two franchises involved. We will talk about Ricky Williams retiring. We might talk about Maria Menounos wearing a Giants bikini. We'll talk about Knowshon Moreno driving around intoxicated in a Bentley with a license plate that says Sauced. We'll talk about Matt Leiding, Rob Gronkowski dancing at a Super Bowl party afterwards, and more. Ryan Wilson, are you recovered from the Super Bowl trip?
No, I am not. I actually woke up at around 1 p.m. on Tuesday afternoon after 8 days of not sleeping. So I'm getting there, though.
Yeah, it's a pretty hectic trip. And, you know, as an apology, because I know, I mean, not an apology. We wanted the setup to be a little bit different. We expected to be cranking out podcasts while we're there. And the way it works, because we didn't have the I don't want to say we didn't have the equipment, but we weren't really prepared for being on Radio Row with the podcast. So next year it'll be better. Stay with us and we're sorry, or something like that. Anyway, the Giants won. Ergo, Tom Brady is a choker. Bill Belichick can't coach. Eli Manning is going to the Hall of Fame, and he's going there with Tom Coughlin. Do you think those assessments are fair?
You know, it's funny. When you're at the game, as we were, and you're not hearing the play-by-play on television, or I wasn't paying particularly close attention to Twitter at the time, but I was just watching the game, and the game seemed pretty even to me. I thought, and I wrote about this right afterwards, I thought Tom Brady played well up until the moment that Justin Tuck put his full body weight on him and sort of knocked him out of sorts. He hurt his shoulder. I guess they were checking his neck on the sidelines, and that was midway through the third quarter. Up to that point, he was 20 for 24, had two touchdowns. He had broken Joe Montana's Super Bowl completion record. Afterwards, he was 7 for 17 with an interception. So that, to me, was the turning point. Then, you know, the big play was, of course, was the pass to Wes Welker. That, depending on whether you were Giselle or not, was Welker's fault or Tom Brady's fault. But I had no—I thought the game was so close that it could have gone either way, and it literally, to quote Chris Traeger from Indiana, could have gone either way based solely on one or two plays.
Yeah, I find it interesting that before the game, you know, and I'm okay with the fact that everybody was like this. You know, we knew that this was going to determine legacies. It was going to alter how people perceive Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning. But that's just how it is. A second Super Bowl or a second Super Bowl loss drastically alters the way people perceive you. People are also, you know, kind of jumping off the Belichick, Tom Brady bandwagon because they haven't won a Super Bowl in 7 years. That, to me, is insane, as is the notion that Tom Brady is not a good quarterback. I mean, this guy has gotten better since he won his Super Bowls in terms of what he produces on the field.
Yeah, you've been beating that drum. You beat that drum all week because you pointed back to his first Super Bowl victory when he took over early in the season for Drew Brees. And his numbers, he was a game manager at that point.
Drew Bledsoe, but yes.
Yeah, Drew Bledsoe, same difference.
Right.
Short and tall.
Yeah, I mean, people were like, he wasn't better back then. He was a worse quarterback. I mean, in terms of just production on the field, I mean, I don't understand. I don't know. It confuses and annoys me that we preach, you know, like patience up to one game. And then, like you say, it's a game that hinges on two moments. I mean, Welker.
Look, speaking of confusion and annoyance, what'd you think of the Boston Globe's Eric Wilbur, who, I'm not exaggerating, 95 seconds after the game ended, he put up a, you know, 800 word diatribe, absolutely ripping Tom Brady, called him an embarrassment, called his performance hideous, said that he didn't care about the Patriots enough to show up. And the implication was that now that he's married to Giselle, he will just jet off to California or South America and enjoy the off season. When we saw what Dan Wetzel of Yahoo wrote after the game, it seemed to be anything but that.
Yeah, Wetzel's column was fantastic. I tweeted it out, and I mean, kudos to him. Wetzel's a nice dude, too. Brady was heartbroken by this loss. I mean, when he threw a touchdown pass, he was tapping his chest on the Myra Kraft patch that they had sewn onto their jerseys and pointing to the sky. I mean, this meant more to him than probably any other Super Bowl game he's played in. I think that Wilbur's I mean, full of crap. I think he's totally off base with
He got toasted in every corner of the internet.
Every corner of everywhere. I mean,
even Michael Schur was ripping him, and he's, you know, he's less into sports now than he was since fired Joe Morgan.
I mean, I don't understand it. It makes no sense. I think it makes about as much sense as scapegoating Wes Welker for not making that catch. That was a really difficult catch. I think that Brady's the guy, and I'm a little disappointed that Brady didn't say, I didn't make a great throw there, although that's not really his MO. Welker took it hard that he didn't make the catch. He did get both hands on the ball. But I mean, it was thrown in the wrong spot. So I don't know who would have
made that catch?
Eli Manning?
Tyquan Underwood.
Yeah. Tyquan also would have gotten the Hail Mary. I thought it was a fantastic Super Bowl. I thought that the game was, you know, there were some mistakes, especially by the Patriots. They had 12 men on the field when they recovered a Giants fumble. They drew the safety, which I thought was a good call too. But I mean, that was I wonder, you know, Brady didn't mention that either. I wonder if there was a miscommunication on the route, because typically you don't see somebody throw it away downfield like that.
Yeah. That was the first play, the first offensive play, and it set the tone early because they got down 9-0. But look, in the second quarter, they came back, scored 10 points. They scored first to start the third quarter, and they were ready to roll up until Justin Tuck body slammed. Well, he didn't body slam, just, you know, did the suplex.
No, just sacked him. The thing is that Brady on that play, it was a 3rd and 8. Brady steps forward as if to run for the first down, realizes, oh, God, that's not happening, and tries to step back into the pocket. So he's kind of shuffling backwards, and Tuck, you know, took him to the ground shoulder first. And I mean, Tom Brady's, you know, wasn't the same after that.
No, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention, we talked about Welker's mess, but Manningham's catch, easily the best catch of his career. And he's been known for drops. I think he had a few drops early in that game, but then he got hot, and that was the difference. And that came after Welker's drop, so that sort of was...
Yeah, it was the first play. Great play call.
It was the first play of that drive?
Yeah, great play call by Kevin Gilbride to go vertical. Better catch by Mario Manningham to get 2 feet in and stand there. And best throw by Eli Manning. I mean, that was a...
Did you hear what Mitten said afterwards, David Carr?
No.
He said, given the look that the Patriots gave them, you never make that throw. And we were like, what is he doing?
Yeah. No, Eli was like, that's a terrible matchup. And I moved the safety a little bit. And, I mean, absolutely stuck it in a window. I mean, it was a beautiful throw. I tweeted earlier today, does the awesomeness of Mark Herzlick, even though he's inactive, getting a Super Bowl ring outweigh the horrible nature of David Carr getting one?
David Carr deserves it.
He's
been through a lot. He was sacked 4,000 times during his tenure in Houston. We saw him at media day, and he's quite handsome in person. So
he is handsome in person.
Yeah.
So, sorry, awkward handsome pause there. Yeah.
That's enough for me.
All right.
He seems like a decent fellow. He's, you know, he handles failure well. The least he could do is, give him some ball ring.
I like that Herzog's got one. Do you think that, talking to those wide receivers, and I read about that for sorting the Super Bowl pile, is that Hakeem Nicks set records. He said most receptions in a postseason with 28. He had 444 yards, I believe, and 4 touchdowns. None in the Super Bowl, oddly enough. I'll ask one question first, or I'll pose one theory first, and then I'll ask a question. I think that this Giants group of wideouts, and Mario Manningham's hitting free agency, so maybe it won't be the same next year, but is kind of... kind of resembled the Packers group of wideouts last year. And if they could keep Manningham, do you think they would have the best group of wideouts in the NFL?
No.
Okay.
Who's their number 4? Assuming Manningham comes back. Exactly.
Ramsey's Barton.
Yeah. And he didn't even dress.
Jake Ballard. Yeah. I mean, he's a good tight end.
He's not a tight end. I mean, he's not a wide receiver.
I thought we counted those. And we're talking about targets.
I don't think so. Okay. That's a short answer.
Okay.
They're a good group. Victor Cruz is going to get paid. He should get paid. Hakeem Nicks came on strong after, I don't know if he was injured or what was going on towards the end of the season. I know he had hammy injuries and maybe a shoulder injury, but I think it was the Redskins game where he had that ball bonk off his face mask.
Mm-hmm. And he hit the ball up in the air to give the Seahawks a victory with that pick 6 at the end of the game.
Right. But then, you know, he went lights out against the Packers. He pulled a David Tyree in that game. And then clearly he showed up against the – although he did have a fumble in the Super Bowl, but it was recovered by the by Hanoski, I think, of the Giants. So that worked out. But, yeah, there's no disputing that he played well, that Victor Cruz is awesome, that Manningham finally showed up. But they're not even the best wide receiving group in the NFC.
All right, fair enough. And I was wrong. Cruz had the bobble, not Knicks. He popped it up. The Seahawks took it back for a pick six.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He actually bobbled the touchdown catch he had in the Super Bowl, too, but that one he held on to.
Yeah. So they're really good. I think the Giants are in pretty good shape going forward. I mean,
you know, both teams are, yeah.
Yeah. The Patriots, I guess long and short of it, I think that the problem surrounding the Patriots and the lack of the quote unquote lack of success. I mean, Eric Wilbur said he hadn't sniffed a Super Bowl in 7 years. I mean, he's quite clearly sniffed two of them because he barely
lost.
Maybe
Eric Wilbur hasn't sniffed a Super Bowl.
So. Yeah. So, but I guess what I'm saying, and I know our own Pete Prisco, our buddy Pete, wrote that that Brady is kind of turning into a choker, and I couldn't disagree more. I know that they've had some bad losses, but I think those two losses have come as a result of Eli Manning and the Giants stepping up in the face of being underdogs.
Tom Brady threw for 6 touchdowns against the Broncos in the divisional round. He played like crap against the Ravens. He promised Kraft he would play better, and he did, again, right up until that moment, Tuck sacked him.
Yeah, and we talked about it was 7-17 after Tuck sacked him, right?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of drops. I mean, Welker had a drop. Branch had a drop. Aaron Hernandez had a drop. He was playing without his most dynamic weapon, and Rob Gronkowski for the most part.
And you could argue that if Gronkowski had been healthy, he probably comes close to making that Hail Mary catch because the ball hit off Hernandez. I think Antro Roll knocked it down. And as the ball was heading to the ground, Gronkowski, you know, was probably half a foot away from it. You would expect he would have a half a step with a good ankle.
Yeah. And Chase Blackburn doesn't out-jump him on that pick.
And that too. Yeah. That was actually more impressive than the David Tyree catch as far as I'm concerned. Because there's no way a slow-footed
substitute teacher
linebacker who is also a substitute teacher who lists substitute teacher first on his job application outjumps Rob Gronkowski.
But that's the thing. I mean, the Giants were smart. They're like, you know, Gronk got that 120-yard catch, but other than that, the game started. They're like, he's like 50%, and just stuck their best guy on him or their worst guy on him.
We talked to our buddy David Farrar from Yahoo during the week, and he said that he didn't think blocking was for Gronkowski, given how his ankle was, but he certainly wouldn't be as effective running pass patterns, and we certainly saw that.
Yeah. So speaking of Gronkowski, he certainly looked healthy after the game at the Super Bowl party. We were walking back, the Ion football crew was walking back along with Paul Diener Jr., Bengals Rapid reporter. We were walking back from the Super Bowl at like, I think it was like 1:30 maybe.
It was late.
Yeah, and we passed Victory Field, which is the home of the Indianapolis AAA team or minor league team or whatever, the Pirates minor league team, and it is bumping. And they've got a tent covering it. The DirecTV's had the entire Super Bowl. I mean, it's bumping like crazy. And we didn't really know what was going on. And then on Monday morning, I get on the shuttle, the media shuttle to the airport, and the guy's like, yeah, that was the Pats after party. I was like, wow, they were really throwing down, you know, land back in North Carolina, get off the plane, and all of a sudden there are videos and pictures of Rob Gronkowski shirtless dancing to LMFAO, along with Matt Light shirtless on the stage. In other words, these guys suffered a heartbreaking loss in the Super Bowl and then went out and partied like crazy. Do you have a problem with it?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, the alternative is to sit in your hotel room and sulk. I actually thought, I don't know who I was talking, maybe I was talking to Daner about this. I said, I wonder if the Patriots just said, screw it, we're going home now. But that's probably a whole logistical organizational nightmare. So they didn't leave until, you know, Monday morning.
Yeah, no, we were talking about, because I mean, like, if I'm Tom Brady, I get somebody to fuel up a jet and me and Giselle get out of there.
Well, Giselle fuels up the jet. She's the moneymaker in that family.
That's true. But still, I mean,
I have no issue at all. What are they supposed to do?
No,
the season's over.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd be. I mean, Gronkowski was throwing down. I mean, like, he didn't have anywhere to be for a couple months, that's cool. But I mean, I can see how fans would be pissed off. I can see how coaches.
Has there been a backlash?
I mean,
I haven't seen any.
No, I think for the most part the fans have been okay with it. I mean,
they've been busily harassing Wilbur for his.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're. I'm seeing, like, they didn't win the Super Bowl, but I have every reason to celebrate. Good for them. Who's going to complain about seeing Rob Gronkowski without his shirt on? I'm That's a dude in our comment section. A dude in our comment section who signed up today and is a Patriots fan. At least they didn't shoot themselves or anyone. Oh God, these are. I'd rather have the guy.
Speaking of which, we should mention this. We were out at a steakhouse in the middle of the week, and Plexico rolled in.
Yes.
And he, as Andy Benoit pointed out, who Andy had a better vantage point than I did, he went up to Jared from Subway and gave him a bro hug, which was quite possibly the weirdest, most awesome thing of the week. And then we had the discussion that Jared is by far and away probably the most popular of the two in Indianapolis.
Oh, absolutely. He's an Indianapolis guy. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Reading these comments, we're getting killed for posting the story. Yeah.
See, there you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I guess nobody cares. It's just, it looks a little awkward. It's the nature of the beast in the YouTube, modern era. I mean, like if you're at a party that's a public, you know, that's got fans in there, your stuff's going to get shown. And, sports. I mean, SportsCenter's airing footage, showing pictures of it, and you know, debating whether. I mean, it's a debate that fuels it, but it is probably a stupid debate because. What are you going to go do? Watch film?
Yeah, exactly. I'm fine. I have no issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah, Gronkowski will have to answer this question a lot in the offseason. But the dude's like 23. If I'm 23 and I just played in the Super Bowl and I lost, I mean, I'm going to party.
Yeah.
In fact, we covered it. We still went and partied, just not as hard. Anyway, what do you think about Giselle's comments about Wes Welker? She said, "My husband can't throw and beeping catch the ball."
Well, she is right about that. He can't do both. He's kind of slow.
He could if he, you
know. If he were in a cartoon with Bugs Bunny, but no, I don't know. You just can't. It would be nice if she didn't say anything, but I'm sure she apparently is very, very into football. She was in one of the Lucas Oil suites, and as she was walking down to the players' locker room, I guess some Giants fans were taunting her. So, you know, I'm sure she was frustrated, and she probably said some things. I don't know if she wished she hadn't said them. Hearing her talk, I get the sense that she says those types of things a lot, just no one's around to hear them.
My wife pointed out, and I haven't looked at her Twitter feed, but when I got home, I was telling my wife about this at the car ride from the airport, and she said, Giselle says some weird stuff on her Twitter feed. Like, she's always talking about how being a mom is really easy, and she's like, Bridget Moynihan's son is basically like, I feel like he's like mine. that's a little, even if you're good intention, that's a little awkward. It's also easy to be a mother when you are a billionaire.
That helps. Yes, it does.
You know, I mean, like when you can give your, you know, I mean, makes it a little bit easier. So I don't know. It seems like she may be, you know, she comes across as the supermodel wife, but she worldwide, she might be more, she probably is more famous than Tom Brady. And so I think that that's a dangerous combination.
She's running the show there. I mean, she had Brady dancing like he was dancing at the in Brazil. Had him wearing those goofy clothes at the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
So it's clear that she has some sort of Jedi mind control over him.
Well, and Bill Simmons wrote, too, that there's a – and Wilbur, you know, wrote this, too. And I'm not saying that either one's right or wrong, but that there's a perceived backlash from townies about the, you know, Brady's not one of the guys in Boston. I think it's a load of crap to get angry about it. I mean, if he shows up and produces 5,000 yard seasons, who cares? If he's, you know, likes drinking beers in Boston and Boston, you know, like I'm sorry, if I played for the Patriots or the Celtics or whoever, I wouldn't be going out in Beantown.
All right. Duly noted.
Yeah,
he lived in. I think he had an apartment in Boston for a long time. But yeah. Look, he's bigger than Boston now.
And I'm guaranteed I'm going to end up on like a Patriots beat next year, and somebody will pull up this podcast.
Hopefully, Eric Wilbur.
So, what else did you take from our 8 days in Indy? I thought the city of Indianapolis did a fantastic job putting on that show.
It couldn't have gone smoother. Everything from the weather, which I'm guessing they had no control over, to just getting around, it really couldn't have been easier. We were half a mile from the stadium. We walked a lot of the time. Everything was pretty much contained indoors as far as getting to the media events. Yeah, I didn't go to Dallas. You were there, which was supposedly a nightmare.
An abject disaster.
But even, you know, on Friday night, we went to the inaugural NFL Awards, and the media bus, it was probably a mile or two away, the media bus there, and what had to be probably the worst traffic situation Indianapolis has ever seen. It couldn't have gone smoother. So I had absolutely no complaints at all. I will say this, though, probably the second biggest storyline of the week, at least up until well, you know, probably up until kickoff was Peyton Manning.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, I don't put that on the city of Indianapolis, obviously. I put that on Jimmy Irsay in its entirety. People were going to ask about Peyton Manning regardless. But when Peyton did his little thing the week before the Super Bowl where he did an interview and said, you know, if I'm leaving, I don't, you know, it's not because I want to. Irsay should have said, you know, if he leaves, it's not because we want him to leave either. You know, I mean, he could have put it less awkward than calling him a politician and saying he's campaigning for stuff. I mean, they were firing salvos back and forth all week, and it did take away from the, you know, it added a layer of drama and complexity to the Super Bowl, I guess. But it didn't, you know, it did take away from, you know, I guess it's better than just having Gronk's ankle to talk about. But it did take away from the experience, I think.
I don't know.
Do you think added to it?
Didn't add to it. It's just another storyline. And you go into Super Bowl week knowing you're going to have so many goofy storylines. Media Day is just a microcosm of that. But Eli spent half his time answering questions about his brother. Some stupid, some less.
He spent half his time after the Super Bowl answering questions about his brother.
So, you know, I think it is weird. I think you told me this on the prop sheet. The over-under was 3.5 on seeing Peyton on national television during the Super Bowl, and I think it was 0, right?
Yeah, he was shown once max. I mean, that's what I saw on Sunday night, is that he was shown 0, but it could have been 1, I suppose.
Still.
Yeah.
I would have taken the over easily on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, by the way, I should mention this. Daner nailed the score, 21-17, in our
did he really?
Picks. Yeah, pregame picks. Everyone picked the Giants except for Josh and Doyle.
Right.
And that should have been a clue. Both of those guys said the Giants were going to win.
Even though the Patriots are up with like 3 minutes to go.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, anybody who thought it, Prisco, I think Prisco said he thought it was going to be a blowout. That wasn't the case, although it could have been.
Well, he said, we talked to him and he said 10 points. And I looked at his picks. I think it was 4. So he was playing both sides of that.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. all right, so yeah, Peyton was kind of a pain in the ass. And maybe that's the other thing. You know, we felt like we were writing the whole time. You know, we're writing all these stories with these Indianapolis date lines. And probably, you know, 50 of them were Peyton Manning stories, you know?
Well, right. And I Chuck Pagano came and talked to the media, asked him a question about Bruce Arians, which relates to the Colts, because, you know, he's the new head coach and Arians is the new offensive coordinator.
Right.
And Terrell Suggs came to speak to the media after he won Defensive Player of the Year, asked him about Pagano leaving Baltimore, and that sort of is a Colts story. So even though it wasn't strictly Peyton Manning, a lot of the stories were about the Colts, which when you go 2-14, there's sort of the kind of the subplot there. If they had gone 13-3 and lost in the second round of the playoffs, I don't think we'd be talking about the Colts at all.
No, probably not. And I should note, as I'm flipping through our tags, Peyton Manning still has 60 less stories about him than Tim Tebow.
Gosh, how about that? Can you imagine?
Yeah, Tim Tebow was a pretty big storyline, too. Radio Row, he was
the second biggest star there after Madonna that week.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, Tebow, it was a disaster. If you were in the way of the masses, when Tim Tebow was walking somewhere, you were getting
God
trampled.
Helped.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was, yeah, I mean, he was
Tebow help you.
Tebow help you. And he, you know, predictably had things to say, but didn't say a whole lot. I mean, that's just kind of how Tim rolls.
But I would have the highlight for you had to be seeing Philip Rivers 2 feet away, because that is your, I believe that's your idol.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty pumped to see Phil. I like Phil. You know, he's a cool dude. I don't know what my highlight was. Probably Phil.
It had to be.
Yeah. Anyway, we got some news, I guess, around the NFL. What do you think about Matt Forte saying he would, I believe he said he would take the franchise tag?
Well, I don't know. Do the Bears have a new GM yet? They do, don't they?
Yes. And you'd think I would know who that was. I don't.
Well, we were kind of busy last week. Maybe that has something to do with the discussions they've had. Maybe things are a little different now that Angelo's gone. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Maybe Forte understands that as a running back in this post-Chris Johnson era that he's not going to get the money he wants, and he just wants to get as much as he can based on the top five salaries, which isn't actually a horrible idea.
No, that's not a bad idea. By the way, I just saw so we need to talk about this before we move along. It happened like an hour ago. You can write about it when we get done podcasting. The Patriots have re-signed Tyquan Underwood.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw that. I thought that was weird. And that goes back to what Doyle was yelling about after the Super Bowl. Silvestri, I think that was the guy's name. I don't even remember the
defense. Yeah, so it was Silvestri. Why did he do it? I don't think he even played.
He may have played one snap max. I'm not sure he played at all.
Right.
And that was Doyle's argument, of course. And Florio, PFT, actually mentioned that before the Super Bowl. If he doesn't play, then what are you doing? Maybe the matchups didn't present themselves in such a way. Tyquan Underwood, to his credit, tweeted after he got cut, you know, that there are people worse off than me. I'm not going to complain about it. Probably helped that he got a game check and a suit. Well, he didn't get a Super Bowl ring, but he would have if they had won.
He might have caught the Hail Mary.
He might have caught Welker's seam route, both debatable, likely doubtful.
He would have been better than Chad Ochocinco.
Chad had one, maybe two catches.
One catch.
You know, we were sitting in the upper deck in one of the corner of the Patriots end zone, and I had my camera there, so I could zoom in and see sort of things that you couldn't see with the naked eye, and I would check on Chad Ochocinco periodically, and without fail, he was standing on the sidelines by himself with his helmet off most times when he wasn't in the game.
Right. And remember, I mean, I even read about him. I mean, he came out for warm-ups and
– Oh, yeah.
Draw. It's because there really was an undercurrent of support that Chad could be the secret Super Bowl hero and that he could come in and
especially with Tyquan getting cut.
Yeah, you knew he was going to be active, that he could come in, make some big plays. And maybe that's Bill Belichick's reasoning here with Tyquan, is that he was going to only have X number of receivers active. So either he or Ochocinco were going to be inactive. You can't cut him earlier in the week because the Giants could pick him up. And look, I mean, if he's not going to play, go out and get a defensive end. So, I mean, you got some depth on your defensive line. I mean, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but only in the I don't know. I don't think the defense cost him that game. I think it was
offense cost him that game.
But I think, again, it was just Brady getting hurt, whether he admits it or not. He didn't talk about that. I don't know if anyone asked him about it after the game. If they had, he would have said, no, it didn't matter. So, who knows?
No, they asked him. He was like, no, I was fine.
Yeah.
Everybody's okay. Like, are you sure? Because you sucked after Justin Tuck hit you.
And your eyes are really red. What's up with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, it sucks for Tyquan Underwood. But I'm sure that Belichick had intentions of playing Silvestri if the opportunity presented itself. It didn't. And now Tyquan's back on the team with his high top fade.
Indeed he is. All right. So, yeah, Forte says he is willing to take the franchise tag if it leads somewhere. Should the Bears use the franchise tag on Matt Forte?
I wouldn't, but I wouldn't have paid Chris Johnson either.
Wait, would you just let him go?
You would like to keep him around, I would think. He I mean, clearly he's an important part of that offense.
Right.
But it starts with Jay Cutler, and the offensive line had started to play better before Cutler got hurt. I don't know. I imagine what I would think would be fair. Forte would want to punch me in the face over it. So
he wants D'Angelo Williams money. It's interesting because both sides.
Oh, that had highlighted your week. My bad. I forgot about
that.
Oh,
yeah. That was the highlight of my week. Talking with D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. Double trouble. They were cool, man.
They were very nice. They actually gave us a pick six shout out, and they gave your buddy a shout out.
Yeah, we might actually use that on this inaugural edition.
And apropos, they messed it up. So that'll fit in perfectly with what we do here.
The Pick Six Broadcast Podcast. I mean, I guess we'll just put it in over the CBS intro music. But yeah, look, I think that the Bears have an argument with Forte because they can say, yes, D'Angelo got $8 million, but was he worth it? And Forte can say, you see, D'Angelo got $8 million, and I'm better than D'Angelo.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. He is better than D'Angelo, but the problem is that, what's his name, Herney? Herney is in the GM now in Chicago. Right. He's the GM, Carolina.
That's right.
That's going to be the problem, though, because his agent's going to say, well, these guys are getting paid. This is the market. If you don't want it, we'll walk. And he very well may end up walking unless they have to get off their pocketbook, the Bears.
Well, he won't walk. He'll have to sit out the season.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I think here's how I think it plays out is that with a new GM in town, there's no beef. There's none of that old beef between him and Jerry Angelo. Things simmer down with Forte and the Bears. He signs a franchise tag, and they work out a deal during next season with him blowing up while being paid for the franchise tag. They got Mike Tice as the offensive coordinator. They have to have a running game with Tice. Tice is not a pass-first guy. He led the league in rushing attempts. Oh. Before Adrian Peterson was there, or he was top five, when he had Dante Culpepper and Randy Moss.
You know who should have hired Mike Tyson? The Pittsburgh Steelers, because apparently they want to return to running. And this is my awkward segue into what do you
Todd
think about
Haley. Haley? I like it. I like this move.
Really?
Yeah.
Here's what I
you know, it's funny. I was last night after, I think it was last night, maybe it was today, but I was reading through Twitter and I see a huge, I think it's Zierlin.
Yeah.
And he's like, we follow him from the INFL Twitter, and I see him engage in an argument with at Ryan Wilson.
He wasn't arguing. No, he was actually responding because I tweeted him before about the perception that Ben needs to have someone tell him how to behave like an NFL quarterback. Granted, if you want to have someone chaperone him off the field, I have no issue with that. But the problem was that Bruce Arians and he were too buddy-buddy. And my response is, did you see the numbers that they put up? What's the issue? Why does he need someone to be strict with him? And Zierlin was responding to that, Zierlin, that Ben, you know, takes 4.5 steps on a 5-step drop. Fine, I guess. But again, are the results going to be that much better? Is he the type of player that has to be so regimented in his drop back that it's going to improve his completion percentage? I'm not convinced it is. He doesn't seem to respond particularly well to – and look, Haley has – everywhere he's been, he's had conflict. In Dallas, T.O. was yelling at him. I mean, you could say that was possibly on T.O. Arizona – we've seen clips of Kurt Warner and Anquan Boldin going after him in Kansas City.
Yeah, but
Matt Cassel.
Look, he's the head coach in Kansas City. He was running an offense that wasn't suited to what he likes to do. He was second in the league 2 years in a row in passing attempts.
Who was his quarterback and who was his receivers?
Kurt Warner.
And Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan. Oh, interesting.
But this is a good setup for him. You got Ben Roethlisberger, likes
why
to
is
throw
he better? Let me ask you this. Why is he better than Bruce Arians?
Look, I'm not the guy who fired Bruce Arians.
Well, that's all I'm saying.
I'm saying it's a good hire. I mean,
I
don't know.
Here's a good point that our buddy J.J. Cooper made from Baseball America, who's also a Steelers fan, as I mentioned every time.
Yeah.
Todd Haley may very well be qualified, and his resume says he is. But now you have to bring in a whole new offense, whole new verbiage, assuming he's gonna bring what he knows. That would make sense. And now you're asking 11 guys – starters and then the backup cylinder, a whole new system, and pray that that's ready to go by August. That seems like a lot to put on any offense, given that
happens all the time. People install new offenses all the time. Do we hang up, or are you just sitting there angrily?
I hit the cough button because I was sneeze button because I was sneezing.
I was just picturing you staring at me, just angrily staring at your computer, like wanting to.
I punched my computer. No, here's the thing, though. But it doesn't happen generally on teams that are successful. The whole Bruce Arians thing was a very weird. I'm not convinced anyone knows still what happened, other than Art Rooney II and probably Mike Tomlin, but. Whatever, we'll see. You know, I was actually thinking about this after he was hired as I was sitting in the airport on Monday. The Patriots proved that it doesn't really matter who's calling plays
right.
Because against the Giants showed up and they stopped Tom Brady. And it wouldn't have mattered if it was Josh McDaniels or Charlie Weiss or Bill O'Brien. The results probably would have been the same.
I'll be honest with you. I think that Todd Haley might get actually a bad rap.
Here's my issue before you. Here's my only issue with Todd Haley. I don't like the way he acts on the sidelines. I could do without all the.
He's a D-bag on the sidelines.
That's my biggest issue.
But who cares?
I do. I don't like seeing. You have that idiot standing next to Dick LeBeau and just doesn't. For me, it makes
doesn't
me,
jive right with the Steelers mentality.
It makes me feel sad.
Wonk, wonk. Look, he got Kurt Warner when he came to Arizona wasn't really great until Todd Haley took over. Just saying. I was a coordinator. He made Matt Cassel an All-Pro or a Pro Bowl. He made the Pro Bowl.
The Chiefs' record. I mean, the Chiefs' schedule
made it. But he still had a big year. I'm just saying that good year for Matt Cassel.
Cam Newton went to the Pro Bowl. What does that tell you?
That Cam Newton's awesome.
That's also something. Cam Newton might have been the highlight. You had a lot of highlights this week.
Yeah, I got to Cam Newton dropped the Wi-Fi comment. I mean, there were a lot of Panthers there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I enjoyed the Super Bowl a lot.
Yeah, it was a good time.
It's, you know, you come back down from it, you're a little, you know, thrown off and, hopefully people are still, you know, begging, wondering what happened to our podcast. Anyway, Ricky Williams actually retired. He didn't just take the week off for the Super Bowl, or he says he's retiring. What do you think about, Ricky walking away from the game? I like that he got 10,000 yards. I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah, I have no issue with it. He's old. He's been around forever. If he's ready to retire, it does say something though that after he kind of either quit or retired the first time, however you view it, to do the yoga thing and travel the earth like Kane Kung Fu, it is interesting that he was accepted back in the locker room because people were really bummed out when he left the first time, basically sort of quitting on the Dolphins. So good, he came back, sort of restored his name, and now he can go on to do more yoga if that's, you know, his calling.
It's your baby doing what my dog usually does.
Oh, can you hear that?
It's all right. Don't worry about it. No, just barely. Hey, so, no, I agree. I think good time to walk away for Ricky Williams. You know, if you're Ricky, you've accomplished a lot. You didn't win the Super Bowl. You came close. You didn't win the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, why not? You're old. You made a lot of money. You go smoke the reefer.
Left-handed cigarettes.
The left-handed cigarettes, as the kids like to say. Yeah. I'm looking around at the news. They're, you know, pretty. This is the thing about the NFL that's amazing is that it's a 24/7 news cycle. It's 24/7, 365 news cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
We got the combine coming up. Got the draft after that. It's pretty. We'll keep podcasting throughout all of that, obviously. And then we got free agency right on the horizon. We'll get out of here on this. Pick your early Super Bowl favorite for 2012.
I'll go with the Cleveland Browns.
That's weird. I was going to take the Panthers. Can you
imagine that Super Bowl in New Orleans? Browns, Panthers.
Oh, God.
No one attends.
Right, there'd be a lot. There'd be a ton of. You're crazy. There'd be so many fans there. Can you think of somebody? Rob and Bob asked me this, and I was riding home with Mrs. Brinson in the car from the airport, and they're like, who are your final four for next year? And I was like, I don't know. I couldn't think of anybody. I guess you look at teams that have a chance to improve. I think Philadelphia can make a leap. I think the Panthers can make a leap. I think we will see next year younger teams get better more quickly than we did maybe this year with the lockout.
Yeah, I don't have a pick right now, but just because it's the only thing that comes to mind right now, a day after the Super Bowl, are the teams that are just in the playoffs. It happens every year, so I'll wait. I'm going to stick with the Browns for now until I have more information.
Yeah, all right, you go with the Browns, I go with the Panthers, and that's pretty much a guarantee for Super Bowl success. In the meantime, yep. We'll be back later this week. I'm sure our buddy Andy Benoit will call up and want to talk about the Super Bowl tomorrow, even though I won't want to talk to him. And as always, subscribe to iTunes.